90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
Good evening, this is Brian Levinka.
This is Summer Iman.
I'm Glenn Holt.
And Jack Belinsky.
Yay, wow, Jack's back. Yay.
I took a little vacation.
Yeah, you did.
Well deserved.
But it's time. Yes, we're back here. Glenn, tell us what's on tonight's show.
Okay, well, tonight, a 27-year veteran of the Houston Independent School District, Melissa Noriega. She has a unique perspective on public school education and community activism. She was also a member of the Texas House in 2005. Melissa Noriega currently serves on the Houston City Council in Position 3, and she will be here to discuss meetings of the various public safety commissions. Actually, she'll be joining us by phone. And then that will be followed by news wrap from This Way Out, which includes coverage of the ruling by U.S. District Court Judge Vaughn Walker, which declared California's Proposition 8 to be a violation of the U.S. Constitution, and Mexico's Supreme Court has upheld the constitutionality of Mexico City's law opening civil marriage to same-gender couples. Then Dennis Coleman will join us. He has just been chosen to lead the boards of Equality Texas and Equality Texas Foundation. As executive director, Mr. Coleman will lead a professional staff and hundreds of volunteers who advocate for inclusive policies at the local and statewide level. Then at 10 o'clock, we have Gary Greer from Lone Star Volleyball Association. He'll be here to talk about Houston getting the prestigious NAGVA National Championships in 2011 and a first-hand account by him of the Gay Games, which just concluded in Germany. And the B in GLBT stands for bisexual. Around 10:30 this evening, we will have a discussion describing the issues and challenges of being bisexual in the gay community. And then we have This Way Out's feature segment, which tonight focuses on reaction around California to the ruling this week in the U.S. District Court in San Francisco, which declared Proposition 8 to be a U.S. constitutional violation.
Well, and I find that real interesting, and This Way Out is going to cover that very well, but this is a major milestone. You know, I'm not personally, I think we've got other issues to deal with also, but this is an incredible thing, and who knows where this is going to go. But things like this happen because of the foundations we have in this community. And the foundations are these many organizations that we talk about every week. The foundations are the people in this community. But luckily, we've also got something else. We've got this piece of media. Pacifica Radio has been incredibly open to GLBT issues. You know, now they start talking about Rachel Maddow, and they start talking about it on a lot of other things, and you hear it. BBC covers issues, you know, internationally about GLBT issues. That never used to happen, but the foundation came from the independent media, the independent press, independent radio, and we are definitely part of that. And we want to continue that so that that foundation is always here. The foundation takes money to keep us going. KPFT is mostly a volunteer effort. Everybody on the show volunteers. But to be able to do that, we need to have you call us. Call us now at 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. And I'm really proud of this group of people that comes here every week to put the show together. And it's the foundation of keeping the you know, information going in this community. So we're asking us to call now to keep us going. Call us at KPFT. That's 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
And do we have Melissa Noriega on the phone yet?
Yes, sir.
Hi, how are you? This is Jennifer Renee. Welcome.
Hello, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, as Glenn had said, we're on the phone tonight as our guest is Melissa Noriega, City Council Member at Large 3, who's been around, let's see, was the special election, was it 2006 or 2005?
2007.
Well, I missed it a whole bunch there. But the main thing is it's that you've been reelected, but currently you are on the public safety committee.
Yes, sir. I'm the chair of public safety, which is both police, fire, and then it also includes homeland security, disaster sort of stuff.
And you're having some special hearings on that, are you not?
Yes, we are.
Could you tell us about that?
Well, they're in part sort of an outgrowth of some of the incidents of the spring. Not completely. I think having an evaluation of how the police department interacts with the public, or the fire department for that matter, on a periodic basis is a good idea. But there was some concern about our use of force and sort of the rules of engagement with the public. We had an incident where there was a young man who was perceived as a possible perpetrator in burglaries who had an interaction with a group of police officers who were later fired by the police chief, and there were some other things. And so we made a decision to do two things. One was to have hearings to talk about if there's anything out there that we weren't aware of, if we needed to know about particular incidents. And the other was to take the meetings out so that not only were they, were we going to talk about things, but we were going to do it after hours and out in the community. Most public safety hearings are during the day, and they're at City Hall and City Hall Chambers. It's pretty intimidating, but it's also a time that if you work, you can't get there, and if you have transportation issues, it might be easier if we had it closer to you. So we've been trying to do that. We've had three. We have two more scheduled, and then we're going to have a roll-up meeting sort of at City Hall at the end.
Well, I think that's great that you're having that way, because I know myself, when I've had to go to different commission meetings or I had to go to planning here last week, you know, you're in the middle of the day, and if you have a job and need to go to one of these meetings, it's almost impossible without taking off work. So having it at a different time where really the people you want to hear from can access it. Where are, as far, I saw on the flyer that came out, you had a list of all the different commissions that are involved. One of them that I'm a commissioner on, which is the Police Advisory Commission. And are you reviewing all of the commissions, or tell me something?
I'll tell you what we're doing at each meeting is that we're doing sort of a quick overview of what's in place in terms of citizens' review and police advisory committees. Excuse me. And then, but we're really trying to hear from the public. You know, we can fill a whole meeting with reports from the police. And, you know, if you have been on one of the review committees, I'm sure you've had some experience with, you know, how the process works. But, you know, we sort of briefly go through what's out there, how you file a complaint, what's available, and then we ask people if they have input or they want to share with us. And we have heard from the NAACP and LULAC, the GI Forum. We've heard from community leaders and civic association presidents. We were in Sunnyside. We were in Cashmere Gardens. We were at the West End, which is actually the Heights, and it sort of straddles Montrose and the Heights. And then we're going to have two more meetings.
Where are they going to be?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I have a new phone, and I'm looking for it to be able to tell you. If you'll give me a minute, I'll break it and tell you.
Certainly.
One of them is Wednesday night, and then another one's next week. And I'll give you the specifics in just a minute.
Is there going to be any review as far as the activities on some of the existing commissions, like the Police Advisory Commission, the Civilian Review?
I will tell you that each meeting we've had members of those groups talk about what they do, and the fact that they think that they're independent and that they are very thorough. And you know, it's interesting. No one has had any criticism of the review that these groups have done. There's some question about whether we ought to look at how we appoint them or who makes those appointments, how often. You know, we turn over, or whether we should, you know, some people have been on them quite a while and then other people not so much. I think it's really part of the question is that sufficient? Is that enough? And there's a fairly frequent discussion of whether the citizens' review process should have subpoena power. It's interesting. We have a grand jury system, and there may be things we need to talk about in terms of grand jury. But the whole idea of having an entity that's able to subpoena evidence, the commission folks that I have heard from have said that the police department is very forthcoming. They, you know, if they feel like an investigation hasn't been thorough enough or that the outcome wasn't appropriate, the police department has been responsive. I'm not sure that's where it's at. I will tell you something interesting that I wasn't aware of that's come out of this over the course of the past 6 months as we've talked about this, is that we have a mediation process. If you have an interaction with the police department and you want to go and file a complaint, it's a very intimidating process. You have to go and swear a formal affidavit. And what people don't realize is that that's state law. Some of this is driven by what state law requires. If we have someone file a complaint, they have to follow the law, and the law says you have to come and swear and do that. But there is an alternative, which is to say you had a problem in an interaction with the police and you would like a mediator, and you can sit down across the table and tell whoever it was how you felt about what they said or what they did or what the interaction was. And, you know, it appears to me that that might be something that the community could make more use of. It may be a little scary, but so is the internal investigation process. And I think sometimes there's a misunderstanding, and it would help the police to hear real feedback. And so that's something that has presented itself.
What would be the procedure for that?
Well, you go and you ask for mediation. You say, well, I was stopped by such and such officer. You know, I got a traffic ticket and he was rude to me, and I want to sit with a mediator and hash it out. And they will do it.
It would seem to me that that sort of openness and communication might eliminate a lot of problems.
It's interesting. There's been a lot of talk about ethnic groups and about various things throughout all of this. I think in some cases there's the ethnic group is cop, you know, and you have officers that we ask to step up and protect us and to walk up to cars or knock on doors not knowing what's going to happen, and it creates a mindset. You know, my husband's a soldier, and to be a soldier takes a certain, I don't know what word I'd use, gearing up maybe would be a polite way to put it. And I think that we ask that of the police, and it creates a way of doing business, I think. And having someone sit down and tell you, you know, for example, a woman who would say, I didn't stop right away, I got under a light, I didn't know who you were, how do I know you're, and, you know, you yelled at me and scared me and you scared my kids and I didn't like it. And the policeman or woman might have not realize that. I think it might be helpful. It's been interesting. The in one of the communities, one of the women that got up and spoke said, "In my community, you're taught to stand up for yourself, and standing up for yourself, I think, is perceived as aggression by a police officer." And I thought that was an interesting piece of feedback. I mean,
yes, it is.
It seems very obvious as you say it, but if someone thinks that being intimidated and cowed by a police officer is some kind of a take something away from them, and they're trying to hold their ground, and the police officer thinks they're being aggressive or disrespectful, and here comes the taser, you know, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. And there are assistant chiefs and executive assistant chiefs and officers there. We have the officers from the community that we're in when we have the hearings. We're asking the police chiefs to respond, and explain their point of view. But I think that asking for mediation is something we really need to encourage.
But I would think so, too. And I would think that this is something, as you were talking, I thought back to myself, but when I was growing up, I was taught to respect the police officer, and there was a certain level of decorum that I would exhibit if stopped or confronted by a police officer. I think without, you know, just saying yes, 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 but saying, okay, this is the situation. And I think we may have lost that, standing up for oneself, because we have seen on occasion some overreacting on both parties.
Yes, maybe so. The other issue we have is that over the years, there's no question that we have reduced services for mental health situations. And we've lost beds, and we've lost services, and we've lost clinics, and we've lost funding. And there are communities that don't have very good fallbacks. If someone doesn't take their medication, gets out of control. And if you call the police, you're going to get police. You know, you're not getting trained psychologists, you're getting the police. Now, I will tell you, Houston does as much, I think, as anyone in the country to train their officers to have some perspective on mental health issues. But I don't think it's enough, and it isn't always enough for the situation, even if it's, you know, the most that anyone's done up till now. If you have a family member out of control, and you don't know what to do with them, and you call 911, which is what we sort of train people to do, you might get EMTs and you might get police, but if they threaten a police officer, the chances of them getting tased or, God forbid, possibly getting shot are there. And so one of the things that I think we've got to look at isn't just, for example, a traffic stop. We have to have real alternatives if someone is mentally ill or in some kind of state, you know, where we need to be able to handle a mental health issue. And we have to have somewhere to take them.
Well, that was going to be the next question I had. The officer shows up, or EMS shows up, and we find we have a mental situation. What do we do with them?
There was an article in Texas Monthly this August. It's this month that talks about some of the changes that they've made. One of the things Houston does is have a team approach, and you try to include a psychologist, and you try to have, to know what you're going to do and that kind of thing. It's still difficult. It's difficult for everyone. If people are violent or threatening, police officers are going to respond to that.
Well, he has to, because he never knows when he knocks on a door what's on the other side of the door. It could be someone with a smile or someone with a shotgun.
I think it's very important to not diminish the significance of that. I think you're absolutely right.
Well, we've had several officers on here. We had two officers from Homeland Security and Special Investigations on to talk about procedures and how, when situations occur, how to address the police officers when they come, and how to report different attacks or whatever they are. And I have found them as visitors, but also in my interactions, my personal interactions with the officers in the police commission who come to the Police Advisory Commission, as being very forthright and willing to have that conversation about all the issues you're talking about.
It's interesting. It's a lot like the historical preservation stuff or anything else. You know, if you're wanting to live in a neighborhood, you want it to be charming and you want it to be historical and all that. And then when you want to sell, you want to be able to do what you want. And if you're dealing with the police, you know, when you need them, you want them there, and you want them to handle it. But if you've got a problem that you're part of, you want them to be polite and you know, not terrorize your kids or, you know, stop somebody inappropriately. And so you always have, you know, both sides of the coin.
Is there anything that's we can anticipate that's going to come out of these hearings that you can see that might be changes that you can talk about, of course?
Well, you know, we're not done yet. What I'm going to do, I think, what we're working on in my office is sort of summarizing what has gone on. Each meeting has some little kernel. I walk away from every single one of them with little one-liners and little examples of things that are just priceless. You know, there's such good information. But the overarching themes aren't all that different. However, we're trying not to miss specific feedback, you know, by assuming that, you know, that we've heard it all. We certainly have not. What we're going to then have is a meeting with council members who have been very restrained. I've asked them all to let the public speak. These have all been two-hour meetings, 6:30 to 8:30. We're in city facilities that close. So they, you know, they can't go on forever. And so we're going to have a meeting where council members can hash through, you know, what they think, what they've heard. There are a lot of different perspectives on council about police, very different perspectives. Probably has as much to do with each individual's own personal, you know, interactions growing up and in their community and then whatever their council experience is.
Melissa, is there a place where the public can go to find out where these next meetings are?
They are, they can call my office. And the other thing is...
Would you give us that number?
Yes, it's 832-393-3005.
Thank you.
Now, the other thing that folks can do is email, and it's @large3, the number. So it's @large3, all one word, @cityofhouston.net. And if someone has a story, an experience, a suggestion, a concern, a criticism, if they email it to us, we will include it in this whole process.
All right. Thank you, Melissa, for coming on. I really appreciate it, and it's been very interesting. If you have some more information after you finished all of them, I really would appreciate it if you'd come back on the show and tell us about it.
We would like to do that. I think if we're going to make some changes, we're going to need to let folks know. So I certainly appreciate that, and I just thank you for letting me be part of this tonight.
Thank you. And we've been speaking with Melissa Noriega, one of the outstanding city council members at Large 3, and this is Queer Voices.
And speaking of Queer Voices, it's been awfully quiet out in the lobby. We haven't heard the phone ring at all, and it is really important that you show your support not only to Queer Voices, but also to KPFT at large. This is a really incredible radio station. Let's the community come in and do programming. It's not the general manager, it's not the program director that tells us what guests to put on, what we talk about. As long as we follow the basic rules of you know, keeping the station on without the dirty words, we're pretty much free to do what we want to do, and we really take that as a responsibility to the community. And I hope you would take this as a responsibility to the community to support KPFT. You know, we have all different types of levels, from $35 to, you know, there's really no limit. And, of course, we don't have lobbyists that pay us to keep us on the air. What we do is we have the regular citizens, for the most part, that, you know, supplies, I think, about 75 to 85% of the revenue of the money that keeps us going. And the money is basically to keep the transmitter going, pay the light bills, pay the electric bill, and that's really high with our 100,000-watt transmitter. And, you know, we're actually digital radio, so we offer a lot of things here that no other radio station in Houston does. And if you tune across the dial, you'll hear a lot of blandness, and, you know, it's not really our point to compare us to everybody else, but we are very different. And we are the radio station that hits, serves communities that are not served, that are underserved. So we would really appreciate it if you'd pick up the phone, call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
I'm Jen Mahoney.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 7th, 2010. U.S. District Court Judge Von Walker issued his long-awaited ruling on August 4th in Perry v. Schwarzenegger. The landmark federal trial in San Francisco challenged the validity under the U.S. Constitution of California's marriage equality banning Proposition 8. Walker's 136-page decision exhaustively analyzed all of the evidence and legal arguments presented before him during the nearly two-week trial earlier this year. But the breadth of his conclusions and their sweeping condemnation of the November 2008 voter-approved ballot measure stunned even some equality supporters. Walker wrote that the relationships of the partnered lesbian and gay plaintiffs are consistent with the core of the history, tradition, and practice of marriage in the United States. He determined that Proposition 8 fails to advance any rational basis in singling out gay men and lesbians for denial of a marriage license. Indeed, the evidence shows Proposition 8 does nothing more than enshrine in the California Constitution the notion that opposite-sex couples are superior to same-sex couples. He called the exclusion of lesbian and gay couples from marriage an artifact of a time when the genders were seen as having distinct roles in society and marriage. That time has passed. The evidence shows conclusively, he wrote, that moral and religious views form the only basis for a belief that same-sex couples are different from opposite-sex couples.
The attorneys who opposed each other in Bush v. Gore, Theodore Olson and David Boies, were recruited by the recently formed American Foundation for Equal Rights to represent two same-gender couples and the city of San Francisco. Their legal team argued that Proposition 8 violates the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause because it discriminates based on gender, and that it violates the Due Process Clause because it restricts the fundamental right of marriage. Walker agreed, writing that, because Proposition 8 prevents California from fulfilling its constitutional obligation to provide marriages on an equal basis, the court concludes that Proposition 8 is unconstitutional.
The plaintiffs called 16 witnesses, including researchers from the nation's top universities, and presented heartfelt testimony from gays and lesbians describing why marriage was important to them. The right-wing Alliance Defense Fund, which stepped in to represent Prop 8 backers after both California's Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and Democratic Attorney General Jerry Brown took the unusual steps of refusing to defend the measure on the state's behalf. The defense called only two witnesses, and both made concessions under cross-examination that actually supported the plaintiff's case.
Walker issued a temporary stay of his ruling, asking each side to submit arguments on whether or not he should allow it to take immediate effect. An estimated 18,000 gay and lesbian couples married in California between the time in 2008 that the state Supreme Court's equality ruling took effect in June until the passage of Prop 8 in November overturned the High Court. The state continues to recognize those marriages, arguing that a similar situation could result if Walker didn't permanently stay his ruling. Prop 8 backers immediately filed papers asking him to keep it from taking effect until the case is ultimately resolved by higher courts.
In a somewhat remarkable move, Governor Schwarzenegger joined Attorney General Brown in separate motions asking Walker to let California's lesbian and gay couples marry immediately. The plaintiff couples and the city of San Francisco also strongly oppose a permanent stay. There could be a decision on the issue by the time you hear this newscast. According to the National Center for Lesbian Rights, several counties have announced that if Judge Walker lifts the stay, they're ready to begin issuing marriage licenses and performing civil ceremonies for same-gender couples.
Prop 8 backers have already filed a challenge to Walker's ruling with the U.S. District Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, which is the nation's largest and has jurisdiction over several western states, Alaska and Hawaii. Most observers expect the case to eventually come before the U.S. Supreme Court. Barry McDonald, a constitutional law professor at conservative Pepperdine University, told the Los Angeles Times that Walker's findings that sexual orientation is biological and not voluntary, that children don't suffer harm when raised by lesbian and gay couples, and that Proposition 8 was based primarily on irrational fear of homosexuality, are going to make it more difficult for appellate courts to overturn this court's ruling. John Eastman, a conservative scholar, Prop 8 supporter, and a former dean of Chapman University Law School, said that Walker's analysis and detailed references to trial evidence were likely to sway U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. Eastman noted that Kennedy is generally considered to be the usually split court swing vote and that he'd likely rule in favor of marriage equality. It may be 2 years or more, however, before the case reaches the High Court.
It was a good week for marriage equality in Mexico, too. The nation's Supreme Court ruled on August 5th in an 8-2 vote that the law opening civil marriage to same-gender couples passed earlier this year in Mexico City is constitutional. The justices rejected arguments by lawyers representing the politically conservative federal government of President Felipe Calderón that the measure violates the Mexican Charter's guarantees to protect the family. The majority opinion noted, however, that the document doesn't specifically define what a family is. The High Court must still decide if the law's inclusion of adoption rights passes constitutional muster, and if their ruling applies only to the nation's capital city, or if it should become the law of the land. Those actions may come at any time. Mexico's once preeminent Roman Catholic Church predictably condemned the ruling, as did conservative politicians. Cardinal Norberto Rivera Carrera previously called the marriage equality law immoral and reprehensible. Mexico City authorities said that as of earlier this week, 320 couples had already wed since the law took effect on March 4th, almost equally divided between gay male and lesbian couples.
Argentina became the first country in Latin America to extend civil marriage rights to gays and lesbians in July, and same-gender couples have already started to wed there. But commentators say that a bid by two senators in Chile to make theirs the second South American marriage equality country may not go very far. Fulvio Rossi, who leads the country's Socialist Party, said his bill was about strengthening democracy. It does not address adoption rights, which he said could be debated at a later time, but that it would simply remove references to gender in the country's marriage laws. Roman Catholic Cardinal Francisco Javier Aranzures, the Archbishop of Santiago, told reporters that allowing gay and lesbian couples to marry would be an aberration. Chile's conservative president, Sebastián Piñera, believes marriage should be restricted to heterosexuals, but has said he supports civil unions for same-gender couples. One political analyst said such a measure might be more acceptable to a divided congressional majority and an internally fractious opposition party. Chile only made divorce legal in 2004.
In other news, a Sudanese court in Khartoum sentenced 19 young Muslim men this week to 30 lashes and a fine for wearing women's clothes and makeup at a party, a violation of public morality laws. According to Reuters, many of the defendants tried to hide their faces from hundreds of people who watched as they were lashed immediately. The trial judge said police had video of the party showing the female-attired men dancing and that a single woman who was present had fled the scene. Islamic Sharia law has been woven into Sudan's legal code. The southern part of the country was exempted, but it still applies in Khartoum, where many non-Muslims live. The men had no legal representation and said nothing in their own defense. One lawyer in the courtroom, who declined to be named, told the news agency that public opinion and the media prejudged them, and lawyers were too scared to come and defend them.
But the Global Post reported this week that Uganda's notorious anti-homosexuality bill is stalled in a legislative committee. The draconian measure was introduced in Parliament last October by a lawmaker with reported ties to U.S. Christian promoters of so-called reparative therapy. It punishes some cases of private consensual adult gay sex with death. It also subjects anyone who fails to report a suspected gay or lesbian person to the authorities to 3 years in jail. The bill has been roundly and loudly criticized around the world. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni appointed a commission in January to re-examine the proposal. It advised Parliament to withdraw the bill. According to the Global Post, Ugandan LGBT activists don't think the law will pass, even if it is brought up for a vote, at least during the current parliamentary session.
And finally, then-New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani made headlines for doing it, and the mayor of Reykjavik followed suit this week, so to speak. John Gnarr, the Icelandic capital's mayor, turned up in a pale blue and lavender floral dress, a blonde wig, and bright red lipstick and fingernails before an appreciative crowd on August 5th to launch the city's 12th annual Pride celebration. He told them that he was there in the absence of Mayor Gnarr, as he is too busy to attend. At least 50,000 people were expected to join the annual march through the Icelandic capital on August 7th, followed by an outdoor concert headlined by the country's biggest pop star, Paul Oskar. Britain's Pink News described Mayor Gnarr as a comedian and actor by profession who won the vote in June after forming the Best Party. "This is what happens," Gnarr said of his outlandish drag persona, "when the people elect a clown as a mayor."
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 7th, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Jen Mahoney.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
The roots of democracy are in the actions of each citizen. As citizens, our actions contribute to the process. No matter where you are in the spectrum, from a non-voter to a political activist, your actions make a difference. KPFT is proud to cover the politics of our democracy in an informative, insightful way. Your contribution to KPFT helps us continue the work of bringing you the news you need. Call now with your financial contribution.
Give us a call right now. The number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Or visit kpft.org to make your pledge online. KPFT, Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And in the studio, we have the newly appointed Executive Director of Equality Texas, Dennis Coleman.
Yes.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to Houston.
How are you? Thank you for coming in from Austin to be with us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, how does it feel being the new Executive Director?
It's a little overwhelming.
Overwhelming, did you say?
You're only in charge of the one of the largest states in the country.
Absolutely, yeah.
The and political rights for us.
I mean, exactly. I have the burden of Texas on my shoulder.
That's right. You're the organizations that are protecting us.
Yes.
We appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
Well, you look like you can handle it. But you've been doing this for a while. You were with Lambda Legal. In
correct.
This area. Tell us about what you were doing at Lambda Legal.
With Lambda Legal, I was the South Central Regional Director, covering 8 states within the South Central region, based out of Dallas.
Uh-huh. That's not quite as 8 states. That's not quite as big as Texas.
Depends on which states.
Yeah. Pretty much handling fundraising, education, and public information and administration. So raising money, running the office, and going out and educating the community about the work of Lambda Legal.
For our listeners that may not know what Equality Texas is, can you tell us a little bit about what it is and what it does for our community?
Right. Equality Texas is the only LGBT lobbying organization within the state. Equality Texas envisions a state where everyone is treated with dignity and respect.
That means GLBNT.
All those.
Yeah. Your predecessor, Paul Scott, and I met first when he took over as executive director, and I was president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the things that we wanted to work on, was the interaction between a statewide organization and the local organizations, and which makes the big difference. You know, we local organizations need that statewide leadership, and so,
and vice versa.
Yeah.
Why is a statewide political organization important? I mean, why do we need to have that?
Well, I think it goes back to the same reason why you have your local organizations. The states have their own uniqueness in how they conduct business, how their legislation works. And so the statewide organizations offer that. They are that uniqueness that is for each state. Unlike, you know, our national organizations that look at a bigger picture, the statewide organization looks at that local community, that local state work that needs to take place.
Well, also, you have the ability to address statewide issues.
Absolutely. And we're also, I mean, being a part of, you know, one of the reasons that I came to Equality Texas or pursued the opportunity there was because I have worked for two national organizations, one as a volunteer on a board, and then, of course, the paid one with Lambda Legal, was that so many times, you know, when you would tell people that you were from Texas, you know, the first question is, what is that like?
We get that too. Yeah,
but, you know, being born and raised in Texas and knowing the organization and the vibrancy of all of the LGBT organizations here and what we have to offer, you know, I thought, you know, what a great opportunity to kind of take that, you know, take that outside of Texas and really fight for our rights here, because we have vibrant and very organized communities around the state.
Yes, we do.
You know, unfortunately, we just don't have, you know, the support at the legislature to have those laws that, you know, that can protect us.
Well, we don't have enough members who are GLBT friendly in the legislature?
Well, I think we do. I think we just have to have them come out.
Ah, yes.
And I don't. Did you really mean come out, or was it figuratively?
Well, I think you're hitting on the point that Texas is changing and it's becoming more urban and more progressive, and you know maybe the state laws are a little bit lagging. And
right.
We're kind of on the point, the precipice of that change in the state legislature.
Right. I was talking to our political director Randall Terrell, and he was kind of giving me the rundown, walking me through the Capitol and giving me the rundown. And, for many years, we've been on the defensive trying to keep bad things from happening. I think this is going to be the first time that we will actually have an opportunity to move positive legislation forward. And we actually have legislators who are trying to, battle to see who's going to carry that, that gay bill. And so I think that's, that tide shift that you're talking about.
Well, and two, what's important, in the legislative process is there are a lot of little bills, little nuances in the law that affect our community greatly and which don't get the notoriety or the notice and all. One in particular with the Nikki Aragoose case, mm-hmm. the change in the family code
right.
that was actually came out of the legislature with unanimous votes, but labeled or stated that if you have paperwork as far as showing a sex change, that then you can use that to get married.
You're all good.
Yes. When Chisholm and some of these other people actually would vote for something like that, I was astounded.
Yeah.
But that's the work of Equality Texas. And Randall Terrell and all of you
exactly.
really have done it.
I was going to ask, what are some of the political priorities that you see Equality Texas taking on in the near term?
Well, definitely, something that was a priority when I was with Lambda Legal and working with Equality Texas was the Safe Schools Bill. It died. Last session, and we are battling greatly to make sure that it's moved up and that it's voted on early. And so I think that's something that we're hoping for and we see as a victory. The other thing that we're looking at is gender markers on birth certificates.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the next thing that we think that we can get some strong traction on, and Randall has been working very hard with legislators on that.
Now, I know I'm holding my breath here, but gay marriage in Texas, is that a pipe dream, or could that one day be? I mean, I don't even know if I could imagine that, but in Texas, is this a possibility?
Wow. I'm going to hold out for that. I don't think it's a pipe dream. I think that it's one of those things. Who would have thought that Lawrence v. Texas was making it all the way to the Supreme Court and strike down all the sodomy laws. And
it come out of Houston, Texas.
And come out of Houston, Texas. And so, I'm holding my breath as well on that. And I think that is something that's going to be close. And I think it's going to be that perfect storm that's going to happen, that's going to make it happen.
I grew up thinking not in my lifetime would we ever even discuss gay marriage on any level. And now it's happening in states around the country. And, it's being talked about and... change is a coming.
Change is a coming. There's a song.
Well,
yeah. Yep.
What other issues do you see possibly in the coming legislative session? Because, of course, the outcome of the election will depend on a number of things. But what else?
Well, I think those are the two that I know that we are having high hopes on. Something around foster care. We hope. That is in the works. Something around second parent adoption.
I was going to say adoption and foster care go hand in hand in many cases.
Yeah, so I think that's something that we're hoping on. We would love to have some statewide employment,
non-discrimination.
Yes,
that would be awesome.
Yes,
yeah. And I think kind of what you're saying is the state is lagging a little, behind when we have so many Fortune 500 companies that have policies in place. And so you wonder, when is the state going to catch up to that?
Well, Texas is quickly becoming a very urban state. And, urban people demand certain mm-hmm. benefits,
yes.
especially the people that come to work in the big cities and the Fortune 500 companies.
Yes.
Well, a whole generation has grown up with, understanding or knowing about GLBT people or admitting that they know one of us,
right.
and that changed their whole perspective mm-hmm. on what we are and what we stand for, and that, all we want is the same things that any other citizen has.
Absolutely.
I was wondering, we were talking, Brian brought up about gay marriage, but that was a constitutional amendment.
Right.
That would mean that the legislature would have to get it on the ballot, and then it had to be voted on again.
Yeah.
So it'd be like a little mini Prop 8 kind of thing here?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. We have these discussions all the time. What is it going to take really for Texas to LGBT people to mobilize? What do we need to get around? I mean, they raise so much money from Texas around Prop 8, when is our Prop 8 really going to happen, and what's going to get people mobilized to really do that?
Well, there's always the possibility that a Supreme Court or a lesser court, federal courts, ruling saying that it's unconstitutional to ban gay marriage would sort of undo the constitutional amendment.
And since I've been here, for 4 weeks, I haven't really kept track, because I don't even know where the divorce thing that was going between, the two men that, were trying mm-hmm. to, because I think that could change things. And I haven't followed it since I've kind of moved from the legal part to
yes,
over
it,
here.
It sort of dropped off the radar, didn't it?
Yeah, and so I'm wonder when it's going to resurface.
Right, but if you have a gay divorce, then that means you had a gay marriage at some point.
Exactly. Exactly, and I think that's what they're struggling with is, by recognizing a divorce, you're recognizing that a marriage did take place. Yeah. And so it's going to be interesting, but it has really dropped off, and you haven't heard anything about it. So, and maybe we should be talking on the radio about something that's happened.
Well, a month or so ago, I was reading excerpts from the Republican Party platform.
Oh, my.
And one of them, their platform items, is that marriage be defined as the marriage between a natural man and a natural woman, which I thought was a slap at me, but specifically.
Well,
but
I like the part where they outlaw the marriage when a clerk marries you. It's a punishable offense.
Now, this last weekend, I married a couple down at Galveston, and if they had been a same-sex couple, whether it's recognized by the state or not, I could be arrested if they had their way.
That's the platform, yes.
Yeah. Exercising my religious freedom as a Christian minister.
Mm-hmm.
So,
if we have listeners out there that want to get involved politically with Equality Texas, how would they do that? Do they need to contact someone?
Well, absolutely. They can definitely go to our website, www.equalitytexas.org, which is the perfect place to do that.
What sort of things could people do? I mean,
well, it's interesting. One of the things that we are looking at, that was in the overall strategic plan for the organization, was to start these resource groups. And that would be local committees within each of the cities that would actually, work in their communities, working with their legislators here and in support of what the work of Equality Texas. And I think that is definitely something that we would love to do here in Houston. If I remember correctly, and I think somebody was trying to school me a little bit on Houston, on HERA and, Equality Texas, that at that time when it merged, it was mm-hmm. Equality Texas Houston.
Right.
And so we would love, to have something like that, because I think one of the things that we could definitely do, or what Equality Texas could definitely do, is find a way to deploy field people to kind of work on some of the, some of the important campaigns. I think that's one way, but the other way is to engage volunteers to do that. And so if people want to support Equality Texas through that, I would say, we have, two board members here, mm-hmm. Rob Scarmato
yeah.
and Grant Kaplan,
yes.
are here, who are willing to, have people come and volunteer and work and do that. And if, I think you said you guys are, it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so if they want to come to Austin, Dallas, Amarillo, San Antonio, we're always looking for help.
And it's more than just financial. It's
exactly. And actually, that's what I'm, that's what I'm talking about, is that we are, we definitely need the finances, of course. No organization cannot survive without having people giving to the organization. And being the only statewide organization, it's very important for us to have finances to keep, keep doing the work that we do, to keep the Randa Terrells, walking the halls and doing that, and our field people people doing that. But it really is about how do we mobilize our community. That's really it. How do we mobilize our community? On March 7th, 2011, is, you know, our lobby day. So we would like to see, you know, hopefully I could be invited back to get people.
Absolutely.
Put it on your calendar.
But, I mean, but, you know, that's, I think, the one, you know, definitely the time we can do that is to mobilize as a state on March 7th and do lobby day. But, you know, when session is not, when they're not in Austin, you know, we should be
visiting them at them.
Absolutely.
So if you're listening in, if you've just joined us, we're talking with Dennis Coleman, who is the new executive director of Equality Texas. Well, you know, I've been to several lobby days, and for many years it was we had the transgender lobby day, and then we had the combined one last year. And we've actually done two of them, haven't we? But it was excellent. It was so well attended. A lot of people there. We just flooded we knew who our friends were because the ones that hid when we came down the hallway.
Oh, they saw you coming.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why Dan Patrick is my state senator. Mm-hmm. Why he was gone? You know, he was there. I had an appointment till he saw me.
Yeah. So Dennis, I think the issue I see is that we're kind of, as a state, we're not united, and we need to kind of pull together. Like, our cities aren't working together. We're kind of, you know, insulated, I think, because Houston kind of does their own thing politically, and you know, Dallas and all the different cities. So how do we rise up as a state and become a united front?
Well, I think you support Equality Texas. I think that is our united front right there. I think you have a statewide organization that is working in all of the communities, and I think it's the perfect vehicle to bring all the communities together. And so I think that's what we do. And I think the other way is through Equality Texas is that, you know, we help one another. So if there needs to be a rally in Houston, you know, it should not just be Houston people doing the rally. Mm-hmm. Dallas people should be coming. San Antonio people should be coming, and vice versa. You know, and so I think we have to find that vehicle that will bring us all together and do that. I think Equality Texas is that. I think, and Lobby Day is the perfect opportunity to know who's doing the other work around the state.
I was going to say that one thing that came out of that is that, you know, this is a big state, and by coming to Austin for Lobby Day like we have, it's the networking with the different people from different areas who you bond with, and you get exchange phone numbers and email addresses, and you stay in touch with one another so you know what's going on and can mobilize statewide.
Exactly.
And we can only do that with an organization like Equality Texas.
Yes.
And if we... if our voices are loud enough, our representatives will listen.
Absolutely.
And we just have to be the squeaky wheel.
Exactly.
To get the grease, exactly. So to speak.
What is it you see as far as your own personal goal? What do you want to see happen?
Well, you know, coming in, it's for Equality Texas to be the go-to organization. We should be that resource. If there is, you know, for instance, the GOP platform, you know, no national organization should be talking about that. That should be something that we talk about, and we should be engaged in that. If you are looking for, you know, people to come work on a campaign, we should be that organization. Or if a local organization is looking for volunteers, we should be the organization that can say, hey, who do you have in your database? That we can reach out to. We need, you know, X number of people to come and do that. We should be that. If someone is, you know, finds themselves discriminated against, you know, they should be calling us. They should be calling us. And we should be able to know the resources around the state to get them that help that they need.
Totally agree. Those are awesome visions and goals, I think.
And again, what's the contact information? Because somebody by now, if they didn't know about Equality Texas, they weren't paying attention. But they're hearing you tonight, and they're hearing you talk about Equality Texas and what you're doing statewide. How do they get in touch with you?
With me?
Yes.
Oh, well, you need to talk. Okay, you're the man.
We're gonna
Well, I mean...
I mean, they can call the office Austin. What's that telephone number?
It is 512-474-5475.
And there's got to be a website they can go to look at.
Absolutely. www.equalitytexas.org.
And an email address? Or is it just go to that site and look contact?
I would just go to that site and click contact. And I think along the tabs it does say if you want to volunteer, of course, if you want to donate, if you want to know what the current issues are, you can go there and find all of that out. The other thing that I do want to say, you know, is really an engagement, you know. I've been all about. Am I almost running out?
Yep.
Okay. Is engagement for the entire community, and that means our African American LGBT people, our Latino LGBT people. You know, it's really when we say united and we say that it's about all Texas, it's all Texas.
That's exactly right. Paul Grillery is real big.
Exactly.
You know? All right. You know, Paul. We've been talking with Dennis Coleman, who's the new executive director of Equality Texas, and want to thank you for coming.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, and this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Here's the secret to creating a successful community radio station. Decide what you want to broadcast and put the best people you can find on the air. So we've put the best journalists and DJs we can find on the air to bring you the information and culture you need. You'll hear sounds from around our region, from national sources, and even from around the globe. The result is intelligent, insightful radio presented in a way to help you understand the world a little bit better. But as you know, quality costs. As a nonprofit, we look directly towards listeners to help pay the daily costs of this spectacular service. So do your part. Call now with your financial contribution. We'll welcome you to the team that makes this kind of coverage possible.
Your number to call is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. KPFT, Houston.
Some people might be comfortable getting their information and culture about the world around us by watching the 30-second news reports on TV or the same music playlists on commercial radio. But you're not like that. You want more. More information, more coverage, more access to unique sounds. KPFT provides you with the coverage you need to make your decisions. We bring you this coverage because we think like you do. Information brings insights, music is diverse, and more than the same four songs. And the more you know, the more interesting life is. KPFT is supported by people like you. Call now and make a financial contribution.
Just call us now. The number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Or visit kpft.org to make your pledge online. KPFT, Houston.
Roots of democracy are in the actions of each citizen. As citizens, our actions contribute to the process. No matter where you are in the spectrum, from a non-voter to a political activist, your actions make a difference. KPFT is proud to cover the politics of our democracy in an informative, insightful way. Your contribution to KPFT helps us continue the work of bringing you the news you need. Call now with your financial contribution.
Give us a call right now. The number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Or visit kpft.org to make your pledge online. KPFT, Houston.
We know you can't spend all your time in Iraq to follow what's going on, so you can count on KPFT to do it for you. You can't spend your days following the new agenda in Congress or its dealings with the White House, so you can count on KPFT to do that too. You can't spend your days listening to all the new music to find the best artists and songs. You can count on KPFT. Your support keeps KPFT on the air and gives you news, information, and music you don't hear anywhere else. That's why we're asking for your financial support today. Please make your gift to kpft.org or call 713 713- 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT right now. Continuing to meet your expectations, KPFT depends on your financial support. Contributing listeners provide over 90% of KPFT's funding. So please take a moment right now and make a gift to KPFT at 713-526-5738 or online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston. If you plan to call today or later this week to renew your membership, please consider increasing your contribution. As you've probably heard in the news, Congress has often considered slashing budgets for public interest services. As a result, federal funding for public radio may be reduced. That funding may even be eliminated. Though only a small percentage of KPFT's budget comes from federal funding, this funding crisis means that your contribution is more important now than ever. Please consider increasing your contribution if you can. Every dollar you contribute will make a big difference in the music and news you've come to appreciate from KPFT. Call 713-526-5738 to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. Again, that number is 713-526-KPFT. Pledge now. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
So, Brian, do we have anybody to thank pledging and all that?
No, I don't think the phones have rang at all. So if you're listening out there, we really need you to call in. We don't do this all year long. We just, and in fact, we're just doing this for a week this time. So this is the time to call to make your voice heard for Queer Voices and Gay Radio in Houston. This is your program. You're listening to it. We just had the newly appointed executive director of Equality Texas who drove in from Austin to be on our show. I mean, that's impressive, I would say, and it was a great interview. But you can only hear that here on Queer Voices. And the number is 713-526-KPFT. We need you to call in, and that's kind of voting for gay radio in Houston and showing the station that we matter, we bring value to the community, and that you are listening and you support us. And it doesn't have to be a lot. I mean,
now, y'all, this ain't going to feed the bulldog if you don't all participate.
We have some technology here, and the tower, like Jack said earlier, is expensive. The power, we have 100,000 watts that goes from Conroe to Galveston pretty much. So there's a lot of people out there. I know you're listening. I know you have a little bit of extra money that you can give us at kpft.org or 713-526.
We also have transmitters in Galveston and soon to be, again, one in Huntsville.
And we're on the internet, so you could be anywhere in the world right now.
That's
listening.
Right. Yes.
Hello, so, all of you in the Czech Republic.
I was going to say Timbuktu, but
my homeland, the Czech Republic. So make those phones ring. We have people.
And so, like, if you're up in Canada, send us a donation.
Canada,
don't give us any loonies.
Just go online.
Give us the toonies, not the loonies. Right.
There you go.
Yes, well, you know that it can't be said enough that KPFT is the only place that you can go to hear the real voices of the people in the city. Now, there is no balanced radio in Houston, you know, unless you consider balanced music. That's about the only place. But this is where the voice of the people really is. And Queer Voices, which we're asking you to call in and pledge to this program as well as to KPFT, it's vitally important. It's your chance to say, we appreciate what you're doing. I know I appreciate what Brian is doing and Glenn and Summer and
Jack. And I appreciate what Jennifer does.
The way you can show how much you appreciate us is to call in and pledge. And it's a modest amount. You can, whatever amount can pay for it over a long period of over a year's time.
Take the money you would spend on coffee for a week or a month and just make your own coffee or get it, you know, somewhere else. You know, you go to these special coffee shops that have expensive coffee, that adds up. You could put that to back into the community, back into the radio station, and back into Queer Voices. And, you know, our show is kind of an art. It's kind of a valued commodity in our community. I mean, because I don't know anywhere else where you could get up-to-date interviews on timely in a newsworthy fashion that we provide.
And, you know, we do plastic.
I actually, instead of giving up my coffee, I'd rather give up a pack of cigarettes if you're out there. I don't smoke, but you know, give up one pack a week.
You can start smoking and then stop and then give that money to
do something like that.
It'd be real easy for Jennifer to give up a pack of cigarettes.
I don't smoke.
You know,
if you're out there and you do, that's the kind of donation.
Right, right.
It doesn't take a lot.
For the things that you need and that you see a priority for, you find a way to give the money. Make us a priority. Make Queer Voices a priority. Make gay community radio a priority. We do add value, and we hope to have your support.
Yeah, and don't forget after hours, that, you know, come Saturday night, it's after midnight, and listen to After Hours. That's our sister program. We're the 60 Minutes of Gay Radio, and they are the
Colbert Reporters.
I was going to
the Saturday Night Live.
that was the comparison.
The gay Saturday Night Live.
Either that or Animal House.
Yes, that's a good shout out to that program. Yeah. It's a very good program.
Want to take just one quick
speaking of shout out. I want to give a shout out to Bob Gartner, who is our lonely phone operator right now, who's receiving any phone calls.
Hey, Bob.
You need to put Bob to work. Bob is out there alone. Can you imagine working at a phone, volunteering for a phone bank, and the phone doesn't ring? How boring is that?
Come
you
on,
need
somebody.
Some spice.
Somebody out there can pick up the phone and call 713-526-5738.
And we're talking to you out into the nether suburbs and far off small towns. We know that you're listening. We know we have listeners out there, so let your voice be heard. Pledge into our show.
Well, and remember that we may be the only voice of gay community or the GLBT community somewhere out in the hinterlands outside of Houston proper, out in the county or the widespread counties that we reach into.
I come from those humble and small towns, and that was my only outlet at the time, and we may be the only outlet now.
Well, and you know, our programming covers all the gambit. We've had something from one of our good friends on city council. We've had the director of Equality Texas, and next week we're going to have
I think we just got a card in here.
We want to thank James.
Thank you, James.
Thank you so much, and we really appreciate you. I'm sorry,
JD.
JD, we know.
Oh, is that who? What? I never knew what the James. Thank you, JD.
We know.
Bless
JD.
Your heart. Yes, we know JD. There it is, JD.
And he's out in the hinterlands.
He does Queer Music Heritage, which will be coming up.
That's next. That's on the
23rd.
So in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and on the 23rd, we'll be also talking to Phyllis Fry on political aspect, the legal aspects of what's going on,
you know,
around the Nikki Aragus case.
JD also provides all of the music from his vast library, which we play here online.
Absolutely. Thank you, JD. You're a sweetheart.
One of the things that we're working on next week, just to kind of give you a sneak peek, is we're working on a segment of youth coming out and sometimes they're preyed upon within the gay community. And how do we kind of eat our young, so to speak. And so we're going to discuss that. We're going to have people from different community organizations, and we're working on that for next week. So we try to come up with different issues and topics that are relevant and provide value to you.
Well, and the question is, if you're out there and you have an idea for a topic, a guest or something like that, email us.
Or you can go to our Facebook page. We have both a fan page and a group. Just do a search on Queer Voices. And if you cannot listen at this time and you're listening on the internet, we have iTunes podcasts available, usually the day after, and you just do a search on Queer Voices, and you can have radio a la carte.
And if you're ever wondering, what was that song that they just played? Summer keeps up with the whole thing on Twitter. She Twitters.
She tweets.
Tweets a log of our show.
You're using a southern accent.
Yeah.
Yes, she tweets.
I could use my Canadian accent if you wanted to.
The moose in the house.
We have, what's beautiful is that, you know, we have all of the latest technological ways of communicating with you. And then if you miss all of that,
you can go to the archives by going to kpft.org, click on the archives, go to the time slot that we're in, which is 9 o'clock, 9 to 11 on Monday, and you can listen to the show anytime you want.
And, you know, while you're on the website, you can also donate.
Yes, you
can. Using a credit card, and you just specify to our show, and, you know, we have a goal that we have to raise, and we need you to help us reach that goal.
Yes, they give us these arbitrary numbers, and it's important because they
actually, they're not arbitrary. They're based on what we, our performance in the past.
Oh, okay.
Which,
well,
unfortunately, has been below what some other shows have been turning in, which, you know, kind of, come on, guys, we can do better than that.
Wait, we need our listeners to make a difference.
That's
need
right.
You out there. You're listening. You can help make us make a difference here at the station.
We don't want to get shown up by those other shows.
Wanted a quick thing. I got a text back from Melissa Noriega because we had asked about those next two town meetings.
Yes.
And the next one is on August 11th at 6:30, and it's at the Sharpstown Community Center. And the one after that is August 16th at 6:30 at the E.B. Cape Center.
I see.
And so
she
we
gave
did
a
have
website.
That information.
Her website is at large3.net.
Yes.
And that's where you can get more information about that.
And
we're going to hurl ahead in our schedule here.
We're going to
hurl right into bisexuality, the discussion.
Oh.
Yeah, and there's a little piece of music that JD has provided for that as an intro.
Oh, good.
That's our, so, our radio supporter.
Yes, let's go to the music.
This is Queer Voices.
Bisexual, I want to try it.
Bisexual.
I want to date a bisexual. I want to date a dyke. I want to date a bisexual. I can't decide which sex I like.
Is it wrong?
Is it right?
You feel weird?
I'm uptight.
Is that strange?
Let me say, man, guys were never my scene, but I do like.
I want guys.
I want girls.
Why deprive
half the world?
Am I gay?
Am I straight? I don't think I'm a Peter Pan. Nasty for your girly mind.
Cause I don't wanna be bisexual.
I just might be a
bisexual.
I think I might be bisexual. There's nothing I don't like. I want to try it bisexual. I can't decide which.
Bisexual dating's the end thing today.
That Brad Pitt's such a cutie, oh yeah.
Taking your swings from both sides of the plate.
You get twice as much booty, oh yeah.
That was Bob Rivers from an album called Twisted Radio, and of course the name of the song, Bisexual. This is Queer Voices.
Hi, this is Summer Iman, and we're going to be speaking about bisexuality and specifically the issues that are faced by people who are bisexual within the GLBT community.
And this is Brian Levinka, and we will be asking our guests, which are the... you're with U of H's global organization, is that correct? We have the president.
The president, Cody McGoy.
I'm the public relations.
Oh,
Kirk Lofton, the president, that's okay. Erica Lyles.
Historian.
And Cody McGoy is public relations. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, in GLBT, the B is kind of almost silent sometimes. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Why are bisexuals kind of not considered part of, I guess, our community at some point?
Oh, well, I know. When I first joined Global, I was actually like a freshman at U of H, And actually, me and Cody, we'd been dating for a really long time. And he'd been going to a different school. And I know I personally felt like if I told people that I was in a straight relationship, that being bisexual, they'd think of me more as an ally and I'd kind of be out of the community. I always felt like it would kind of take me out a bit and I wouldn't feel like I was part of the group. And I think a lot of bisexuals, people think, oh, you're just kind of running the fence.
You're just pretending.
Yeah, basically. I think a lot of people think that. So it always just feels like, well, you are running the fence. Like you're either an ally when you're in a straight relationship, and then when you're not, then you're part of the group.
So do you get attacks from both the gays and the heterosexuals?
I wouldn't call them attacks as much as more misunderstandings. Because,
mm-hmm.
Like, I'm president, and I get questions all the time of, well, why are you president? And it's like, well, we're LGBT, you know, I'm one of the four. But
right.
I think it's just kind of, there's a hierarchy, I guess, in the community of who they think is
yes.
more likely to be.
So how do you, as president of the GLBT group, how do you deal with attacks that, you know, you're just kind of, you're only part-time in the community, that you're not...
part-time gay.
Yeah, part-time gay. I like
that.
You know, full disclosure here, I'm bisexual on this show. Well, I mean, not on the show.
So you're a part-time bi.
But just to put that out there so you guys don't feel, you know, completely under attack.
We appreciate it.
Yes.
Well, you know, as a gay male, I'm in a gay relationship, and for me to see a man and a woman in a relationship, I, in my mind, assume that they're heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you communicate that you're bisexual and it's more about your feelings than what maybe your relationship is currently?
Currently, I'm actually dating a female, but I think anyone who knows us knows that we're not straight, and there's no question
so
if you've met us. So
it's becoming more fluid, I guess, the sexuality. There's not a black and white, so to speak, and, you know, on or off switch for sexuality these days.
I think what's more important when it comes to bisexuality is that you realize you like a person, not so much a gender.
It seems kind of hypocritical that, you know, we're fighting for rights in the GLBT community and we're saying that we have these feelings, yet at the same time we kind of persecute bisexuals for their feelings, even though it doesn't agree with maybe the gay community overall.
I know definitely when I joined Globe, I felt like I kind of had to try a little harder. But there's a point, and I've been an officer about 2 years, I mean, there's a point where it would just get exhausting that I have to, like hit on all the girls. I mean, I can't do that. That's sexual harassment. But so there's a point where you just like you have to you just have to calm down, because people are just gonna see, and they're gonna see me and Cody here, and we'd be like, oh, they're either gonna assume we're allies, or I'm going to have to explain it. But if I spend all day explaining it to everyone I know and everyone I've ever met, then...
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
So what are the reactions when you first tell people you're bisexual, especially in the gay community? What are the typical reactions?
Well, me and Cody have been dating since we were, like, 14. We're only 19. I'm 19. He's 20. So when I tell people I'm in a relationship, like, oh, have you ever dated any other girls? I have to say, well, no. But I know I like male and female people.
right.
So
when you tell people that you have lesbian feelings but you've never dated a woman, what did they say?
Well, usually people, like, in the gay community, they'll be like, oh, okay. And so, and they'll usually understand, but most people are just like, well, you're just playing around.
You're experimenting.
Yeah.
Curious.
You're confused.
And unfortunately, I think that there's... with women particularly, there is this stereotype of the bisexual chic, of like the girl who kisses other girls to turn another guy on, or something like that.
The
Katy
Perry.
Yeah, Katy Perry. And by the way, that song doesn't actually work in real life.
Well, I think you did hit on it, that it is kind of, it's more accepted for two women to be together in society than it is for two men.
That's true. You two gentlemen, do you find that you have your bisexuality questioned, would you say, comparatively more or less than bisexual female, like, so women?
I personally couldn't really compare. I'm not a bisexual female. I haven't been in a situation where I've observed someone comparing the two of us. I find that females tend to be more understanding of the situation when I tell them. I've been told, dude, if you're gay, then just be gay. Why do you have to play it off? It's distressing, and I try to be very patient and explain that I was attracted to men, I was attracted to women, and if Erica was a boy, I'd still be attracted to her. But as far as just having people compare the two, I know amongst my straight friends, lesbians tend to be up there on the pedestal, and guys, gay men, just not quite as understanding.
I think the gay community sees bisexuals as a traitor in some instances, because for bisexuals you can kind of, air quotes, blend in if you had to, whereas gay men are with men and are fairly obvious and more overt in our society.
I think that's what's really cool about like our work in Global. I came in after Erica was already an officer, and I moved up. Last year I was vice president, this year I'm president. So I moved up very quickly, and part of me thinks that's probably because of Erica with her outspoken bisexuality, because it's interesting to see how, you know, a bisexual male can move up so quickly in the organization itself. And, you know, when I ran, I didn't have questions like, you know, how can we be sure you're gay enough or anything like that? Yeah, like, I didn't face that when I...
You have to, when you're in that kind of role, you have to be kind of a super gay and be, you know, this kind of gay role model where
Well,
you
if you can tell by my Lady Gaga t-shirt, I think I...
I was about to say that, yeah.
Yes, you get gay points for that shirt.
I'm glad to hear it.
So, tell us about Global and what kind of things Global does at University of Houston.
We kind of work as a social and political group. So we like to say our number one thing we do is offer sanctuary and a safe place just for all GLBT, but also allies questioning, you know, anyone who can come in and feel comfortable just to be themselves. When I went to my first Global meeting, I didn't know a soul there, but it was amazing how quickly you can just slide in and feel comfortable because, you know, everyone in that room is accepting, and everyone in that room is just so, you know, nice. And it was really cool. Where was I going with this? You guys want to take over?
Well, I wanted to ask a question. Since gay marriage is such a hot issue these days, and bisexuals technically could get married, I mean, do you see the movement towards marriage as relevant to you, or is that a passion or something that you have within you?
I was going to say absolutely.
Most definitely.
Because my girlfriend and I were talking the other day, and we decided that, you know, not that we have plans to, but if we ever get married, we refuse until our friends can. We have, and I'm going to name call out here, but, like, our really good friends, Will and Nathan, who are members in Global, are, you know, madly in love and the cutest couple you've ever seen in your life. And the fact that, I mean, they've been in love, you know, longer, but we can get married and they can't. And that's not,
you know,
right.
I think the issue is not only marriage, but the rights that come with marriage. And
right,
I think
right.
That's kind of our common ground for that we're fighting for.
Well, you bring up the matter of bisexuals getting married, Brian, but, like, bisexuals can only get married in hetero-paired relationships. They can't get married in same-sex relationships, just
right.
As any other gay or lesbian couple can.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I almost feel guilty. I mean, I remember when I joined, I just felt guilty in the fact that it was 50-50 chance, basically, for me, and I fell in love with a guy, and that's not... it's just not really fair. He could have very easily been a girl.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, is you can't help who you fall in love with. And I think that's the essence of our community. It's not about, you know, being this openly gay stereotype. It's about loving who you love and being allowed to do that.
Given that Cody and Erica, since you're both people of color, or African-American, do you find your reception among that community as bisexuals different than among the the black GLBT community? Do you find your reception as bisexuals different there than the white GLBT community? Or
I'd say personally, like with my home life, my family are African Americans, and I'm not out to them. I'm out to everybody else in the world except for my family members. And it's because they still come from a very traditional background, very religiously based. And it's not that they would hate me. It would simply be such a weight on their minds to be thinking about me and my immortal soul.
that's everyone's coming out story, is the fear of, you know, judge and losing your loved ones.
Yeah, and I mean, most of the people that they talk to, the people at their churches, other African Americans, many of them have the same mindset. They came from the same communities, the same era and time where social mores and values were being put in. So I find that it's difficult, not just among African Americans, but among older generations, to be more out with myself. Amongst people my peers, people my age, of my generation, we grew up with such a greater range of diversity that it's much easier to come out and to be accepted.
I was going to ask, is it, now that we have more visibility in society, is it getting easier with the more of the social media and the positive TV role models and characters in movies? Is it now we're getting to a point where people know someone that's gay or in a movie, where this didn't used to be the case?
I would say it's easier, but it's harder because you expect it to be easier. And there are facets of it that are, like, you know, like, for instance, you know, probably 40 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to find a global on U of H's campus.
Oh, absolutely not.
But, you know, as I was coming out and trying to face all this, you know, I had this group I found that was very helpful and very supportive. So, in that way, I would say it's a lot easier. But, you know, because you see, I mean, I know I saw on TV and movies and books and stuff, you know, you come out, your parents go, oh, but then they learn to love and accept it, and everybody moves on happily, and that's definitely not what happened with me. So I kind of expected it to be a lot easier than it was. So in that way, it was a lot harder, because my family was not supportive.
Now, how do you reach those students that come from those unsupportive families that, you know, where maybe religion played a big role in their upbringing, and how do you reach out to those people and bring them into the sanctuary of Global?
There are quite a few members of Global who are particularly religious. So when we have new members coming in, we try to take into account their religious background. We have a pastor on campus who's gay and who is more than willing to go through religious ceremonies and traditions with our gay religious members. We had a gay wedding, and we had a priest who married unofficially, but symbolically, it was a lesbian couple, correct?
Yeah,
a lesbian couple. And being supportive like that, I think, helps to give a welcoming feeling to our new members coming in, to let them know that, yes, we do take into account, we know how difficult it could be, the conflict between what your religious doctrine may say or what your family may say and what you are. So we work very hard to be very, very comforting, very sympathetic and supportive for as many different situations that come towards us as officers in Global.
And at the same time, we have those religious people, but we have literally, I know we have, you know, Christians, atheists, Buddhists. I mean, we literally have everyone. And the whole reason is when you walk in that door, the first thing we tell you is, you know, hi, we're so glad you're here, you know, welcome. And that's, you know, the main thing we try to come across is that, you know, we're here to welcome you. We're here to be opening arms, to feel safe that no matter who you are, no matter what your background is, you know, if you're struggling with that, we have resources for you, you know. But at the same time, it, you know, no matter who you are, no matter where you come from, this one room is a room you can come in and feel comfortable and safe and welcome.
Now, getting back to bisexuality, what do you think it will take for the greater gay community as a whole to accept bisexuals on a more wider basis? What will it take?
I think just among everybody, they expect, just with gender, they expect things to be very binary. And it's either going to be love a man, love a woman, and that's it. But I think just, and it's among the gay community and just among society and period, we can't understand there's a middle ground. And we can't understand that there's not just a favorite and there's that it's not binary. And I think when we can understand that period, then I think we'll get somewhere.
I also think that that there needs to be kind of understanding and support from other GLBT organizations that, you know, that discrimination against bisexuals shouldn't be tolerated. If one group within that community is discriminatory, other groups should speak out against it. And one thing I'm thinking about in particular, and I don't know if you all have heard of this, but several months ago there was an event in, I believe it was in California, where a team that had a team in a softball league had bisexual players. That team was excluded from the league. It was a gay league, and they're like, "Oh, well, it's a gay league, and you guys don't qualify. You guys aren't, you know, you aren't actually gay. Therefore, you can't be in the gay league."
Kirk, what do you see as what will it take to get more acceptance of bisexuals in our community?
I would say it just takes more bisexuals to stand up in the gay community. Because I know when I first started, even in Global, just when I first started, you know, it seemed more like a gay men's club. And, you know, in the past year, we've tried really hard to make it a LGBT organization, you know, to have everyone welcome and stuff. So I think what's helped in that is, I mean, before me, having, like, Erica was, you know, one of the heads of the organization, and she was the strong bisexual presence in our club, and I think that helps.
Erica, you kind of led the way and allowed, you know, people knew a bisexual and they could relate, and that allowed Kirk to become president.
So Kirk keeps saying. At the time I started off as webmaster, and our president was actually bisexual, and she was a personal leader to me. Even then, I mean, I was the only officer in a same-sex relationship, so I was probably the first in that sense, just because I didn't know, like, I just felt like I was kind of walking on eggshells.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I'm a hero, Hooker.
No, I think it's more, I mean, you had her to look up to. I've got you to look up to. I can, hope that someone looks up to me and you at the same time as officers and sees that, you know, because, you know, we don't want our club to just be, I mean, as much as I love, you know, gay men, I just don't want it to be a gay men's club. It's LGBT, and I want all members, you know.
You know, in theory, the gay community is this cohesive, loving, we work together on all of our issues, but I think in reality we're very disparate, and we kind of have our own little cliques, and we have our own little groups that we hang out with. And do gays and lesbians mix normally on social occasions?
I
think the question is,
I've actually found that in Global, because that's always like a, this is kind of a bad word, but it's kind of a stereotype that lesbians and gay men don't get along. But, you know, in Global, I mean, to me, it seems like everybody just loves everybody, and we're all cool with each other. And I think that's what it takes. It's just a giant group of people of all of the letters, you know, joining together. And I think
when it comes to Global, I mean, like, we're there because we fit under GLBT, but that's that's such a small thing in reference to who we are, that everyone just finds someone that they can just be absolutely best friends with, I mean, or just hang out with. And that goes across the lesbian, gay, bisexual boundaries. And it'll only stop you if you let it. Because I know a lot of people have told me, and when I try to recruit people, they're like, oh, well, Global OS just seems like a big gay boys club. It's like, well, no, if you don't come in and experience what Global is, then you're not going to know.
And it will never change if we don't bring in those new people and
exactly.
those new different spectrums of the community.
Erica brings up a really good point. Like one of the things we do is we always open with an icebreaker and everybody answers a question. And when they introduce themselves, they say their major. And like last semester, we started where if you were a creative writing major, you did a little cheer. And by the end of it, there were like seven of us all like cheering each other on. And it's like these are people I had no idea, you know, had the same major as me. And mm-hmm. we do stuff like that. I mean, there's a whole bunch of us that are apparently in love with Batman. So we have.
And I think, Erica, you brought up a good point that our sexuality is just a small portion of who we are. And mm-hmm. that, you know, sometimes we kind of dwell on that and that becomes our whole person. But in reality, we're a much bigger piece of a bigger person than that.
Definitely. I mean, there's people always like think just because you're in a gay organization, everyone's exactly the same. And there's a lot of people that I've met that can be like I just left for different reasons, and I could have met them anywhere. And like Kirk said, I mean, there are people I'm like, really? You're in my major too? I mean, I never would have met you if I hadn't come to Global, but here we are.
So on the topic of, you kind of lightly touched on labels as saying that bisexual is such a small part of who you are. Do any of you embrace that term, or do you prefer some of the other terms like pansexual or sapiosexual? There's a couple different terms that try to articulate the idea of it's not a gender but the person, or kind of different variations on that.
What I've seen is that bisexual has become an umbrella term that covers a lot of things. I mean, it covers it, you know, someone who's bisexual could be, you know, what we call the Katy Perry lesbian, who's like bi-curious, you know, or like, you know, a bisexual could be someone who dates both genders, or someone like, you know, Erica and Cody, who are in a hetero pair but are both obviously bisexual. So I think it's hard to say. It's like saying, I don't know, like queer is a giant umbrella term, and I think bisexual even has its little subgroups and subsets, and it really depends on person to person what it means to you.
Do you within the bisexual, you know, identity in that community, do you ever address matters of non-monogamy in Global and those sort of things, like polyamory, if I'm thinking about?
Really, Global is more of a, it's a bunch of college kids, so I mean, half of us are in loving relationships, half of us are single and swinging. I mean, it just depends. Again, like I said, it's person to person. And, you know, Global's big message is that, you know, come as you are, because, you know, we, you know, we're here to support you and love you no matter what. So, I mean, we do have people like Eric and Cody who have been dating for, 5 years? And then we've got people that have a different date at South Beach every week. So,
so if we have listeners out there that want to get more information about Global, is there a website or an email that they could email?
Our website is uof.edu/global.
Okay, that's easy.
The email address is queercougs, COOGS, @gmail.com.
We've been talking to Kirk Lofton, the president of Global, Erica Lyles, historian, and Cody McGoy, public relations.
And hand Erica a set of headphones here for just a sec.
Oh.
Because there's an announcement. Erica. I have a nice announcement here. For your birthday, your mother, Barbara, has pledged $100 to our show.
Well, that is awesome.
Thanks, Thea.
Thank you very much.
We very much appreciate that. And if there's anyone else out there listening, you can call in and pledge right now. But we would like to thank our guests on this segment. Anything else you'd like to tell our...
I bet you didn't know your mother was listening.
Well, give a shout-out to your mom.
I love you, Nigel and Klaus and Gary. Those are my cousins.
If you want to pledge, the number to pledge is 713-526-5738. Oh, wait, sorry. Yeah, 5738.
Anything else you want to let our listeners know?
If there are any U of H students out there listening to this broadcast, please come by and visit us at Global. We'll be posting flyers. We have meetings on Thursdays. Please email us. Come to the website. I will personally welcome every single one of you. We would love you to be there, and we hope to see you soon.
Our first meeting is going to be on Thursday, August 26th. It's going to be 6 p.m. It's at U of H, downstairs in the University Center in the Caribbean Room, and all that's posted on our website. So.
Thank you for coming on, and this is Queer Voices.
When California's Proposition 8 met the U.S. Constitution before Federal District Court Judge Vaughn Walker, the voter-approved ban on same-gender marriage fell apart. The judge torpedoed the rickety legal arguments and questionable witnesses presented for the defense by a right-wing coalition, writing that the success of the Prop 8 campaign came primarily through pervasive TV ads that relied heavily on negative stereotypes about gays and lesbians and focused on protecting children from inchoate threats vaguely associated with gays and lesbians. A community more accustomed to protest marches as LGBT rights are stripped away than celebration when they win them, finally had reason to party on August 4th. Euphoric crowds hit the streets of San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, and other cities around the state and across the country to celebrate the decision. We'll take you to some of the parties on August 4th before we're through, but we turn first to that night's Pacifica Radio California Evening News and anchor John Hamilton.
A federal judge in San Francisco has struck down California's ban on same-sex marriage. District Judge Vaughn Walker says the voter-passed Proposition 8 is unconstitutional because it discriminates based on sexual orientation, on gender, and it has no rational basis. Prop 8 was passed by voters after an earlier state Supreme Court ruling legalized marriage for same-sex couples, leading to the marriage of 18,000 lesbian and gay couples. Prop 8 put an end to further same-sex marriages, but the new ruling will send the issue to a federal appeals court, and ultimately it may end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. Christopher Martinez reports from San Francisco.
Federal District Court Judge Vaughn Walker issued a 136-page ruling overturning Proposition 8. On page 1, he says Proposition 8 is unconstitutional. In his conclusion, he says Prop 8 fails to show any rational basis for denying marriage to gay men and lesbians. In his words, California has no interest in discriminating against gay men and lesbians, and Proposition 8 prevents California from fulfilling its constitutional obligation to provide marriage on an equal basis. David Boyce is a lead attorney in the lawsuit challenging Prop 8. He says there's a long way to go to end discrimination in the United States, but he says the plaintiffs, and generations of activists before them, have made the justice system work.
Gay and lesbians are the only part of our citizenry that is today subject to official government-sponsored, government-enforced discrimination. And we take an enormous step to eliminating that with this decision today.
The California Supreme Court declared California's marriage ban unconstitutional, but Proposition 8 overruled that by changing the California Constitution. That led to a lawsuit in a federal court, arguing that Prop 8 violates the U.S. Constitution's guarantees of equal protection and due process. Jeff Zarillo is one of the plaintiffs. He's been in a relationship with his partner Paul Katami for about a decade.
But we're not here to change the world. Equality is something that our nation has always been about. We read about it in school. Our ancestors came to this country in search of it. Well, this decision today brings Paul and I and so many others like us closer to that equality too.
Supporters of Prop 8 argued the measure upheld the traditional definition of marriage as between a man and a woman, and should be upheld as the will of the voters to define marriage. But Judge Walker wrote in his opinion that evidence in the trial undermined their case, showing that Prop 8 was based on conjecture, speculation, and fears. Therese Stewart is deputy city attorney for San Francisco.
And you can't discriminate against a group of people based on fear, based on prejudice, based on moral beliefs that they're immoral.
Stewart says the federal judge went beyond seeing the harm to lesbian and gay couples when they're denied the right to marry.
When the government treats its citizens, one group differently, it sends a message that stigmatizes that group to the rest of society. And that not only hurts the individuals, the gay people, but it hurts society more generally because the government ends up paying the cost of that. Society pays the cost. So he really connected all the dots.
Plaintiff's lawyer Theodore Olson says taking away constitutional rights to equality harms people's rights every hour, harming all citizens.
So we will say to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, if there will be any delay at all, it should be exceedingly short. We've briefed the issues. There could not be a more thorough analysis of the facts. We're ready to go. We need to have an appellate court decision right away, and we need ultimately a Supreme Court decision right away.
Meanwhile, activists are hailing the decision as a landmark, the first ruling by a federal court on the right of lesbian and gay couples to marry. Chad Griffin is the president of the American Foundation for Equal Rights, the group that brought together the lawyers who challenged Prop 8. He says the ruling sends a message to people who've been ostracized, besieged, bullied, and ashamed.
Be who you are, love who you love, and marry who you wish to marry.
Reporting from San Francisco, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Across the state, supporters of marriage equality reacted with jubilation to Judge Walker's ruling today, flooding the streets in traditionally gay and lesbian communities. In San Francisco's Castro neighborhood, residents toasted one another with champagne as word of the ruling spread. A victory rally got underway at 5 p.m. at Harvey Milk Plaza. That rally is expected to turn into a march to City Hall. Other Bay Area rallies are just underway at Walnut Creek City Hall, Richmond City Hall, Todos Santos Plaza in Concord, and the county clerk's office in Martinez. I'm John Hamilton.
Up to 3,000 people practically danced through San Diego's predominantly lesbian Hillcrest district to a rally at the city's LGBT center. Republican Mayor Jerry Sanders, who once opposed civil marriage for same-gender couples until gay members of his staff and his wife and family, including his openly lesbian daughter, helped him become an equality advocate. He spoke at the rally that night.
I was here for a debate in 2005 for the mayor's campaign, and I knew I irritated a lot of people with my position. And as a young politician, even though in an old body, I was trying to learn how to do the dance. And for that, I apologize because I made the wrong decision. And I want to thank Judge Walker today, and I want to thank the San Francisco City Attorney's Office for allowing me to testify in the trial. And I think each generation has an opportunity. Each generation finds something that's been wrong for a long time. Each generation finds discrimination in one form or another. And all of us out here today, every single one of us, can say that we've been part of helping to solve that discrimination in the United States. And I just want to thank each of you for doing that. And finally, as I look out there, not one of you threatens the marriage of my wife and I.
Pacifica reporter Dan Fritz was at a rally in West Hollywood.
I cried.
Yay.
And she laughed. We were sitting there.
I giggled. Okay.
Original plaintiffs in the lawsuit challenging Prop 8 and the first same-sex couple to marry in Los Angeles County, Robin Tyler and Diane Olson.
There was some media at the house because we didn't want to come out. We thought it would be a quiet day. When I heard, I just broke down crying because it was the correct decision. It's unconstitutional to... For a majority of people to be able to vote away the rights of a minority.
Same-sex marriage supporters are rallying right now in West Hollywood Park and in a much more celebratory mood than many of them feared. The fight against Proposition 8 has united progressive elements throughout Los Angeles. In the spirit of that unity, at 8 p.m. tonight, the Latino Equality Alliance is holding a vigil on downtown Los Angeles' historic Olvera Street. Other members of the West Hollywood community echoed the sentiments of L.A.'s first couple.
We are responsible, upstanding communities and citizens in our community. And, you know, to be on an equal playing field in that regard, that's all we've ever wanted.
Fantastic. Yeah, it should have happened years ago.
Straight people are happy, too. This is my neighborhood, and yes, it's about time.
I'm very happy that the ban has been lifted. So it's been nice to see that they believe that everyone should have equal rights.
Reporting from West Hollywood, Dan Fritz, KPFK, Pacifica Radio.
And this way out, Shirley Lund captured more sounds of celebration in West Hollywood.
We are with L.A. City Council President Eric Garcetti. Your initial reactions to today?
I was ecstatic. There were 18 different couples during the Summer of Love that I was privileged enough to marry. And whether it was a young couple that had recently fallen in love or a couple that had waited decades through their commitment to be recognized by the state, government should never be in the business of telling us who to love. Two consenting adults, the most powerful impulse we have is love, and today it is recognized as not just being for some, but for everybody. I couldn't be happier. I know there's a lot of challenges ahead, but tonight's for celebrating.
We're with Rabbi Denise Eger. Denise, please, tell us your reaction to today's ruling.
Well, it's what a historic and wonderful day for America, not just for California. So it's important that we're all here together to acknowledge this great moment, the brilliance of the attorneys, the wisdom and fairness of Judge Walker. When you read the decision, which I had the opportunity to do this afternoon, he's very forceful and makes his case and makes our case really brilliantly. And I think it's positioned us as a community for the long road ahead. Because there's still a long road ahead. And we know this isn't the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's Rabbi Denise Eger from Congregation Kol Amid.
Hi, I'm Bill Kaiser. I am part of One National Gay and Lesbian Archives, and I'm here today in West Hollywood because this is another historic event for our community. I mean, the idea that we have finally won in the federal court on the marriage issue is phenomenal. And the fact now that this probably will go all the way to the Supreme Court, and we'll see what happens there.
So you happen to be in California for a momentous and historic day.
Yeah.
Tell us how you feel.
Well, I'm emotional.
Country music star Shelley Wright.
You know, being here on a day when history is being made, it's just my luck these days.
Yeah.
Since I decided to come out, my life has gotten magical, and this is one of the great days of my life so far since I've come out. Getting to be here as such a landmark decision has gone down. Everyone is looking at California today. This is setting the tone for equality, and this is the shockwave that will be heard around the world. And it's a big, big deal. Of course, there are a lot of hoops that this decision has to jump through. I know that people are going to challenge it, and as the gentleman on stage said, people are going to oppose to this. They're going to want to do anything but look at the ruling. They're going to try to poke holes in it, but this is a big, big deal, what has happened today, and I am so honored to be in a crowd of amazing people celebrating.
The right-wing media machine was quick to condemn the ruling, and Judge Walker himself, who's rumored to be gay. Maggie Gallagher, the National Organization for Marriage, called him an openly gay federal judge, substituting his views for those of the American people. Tim Wildman of the American Family Association demanded that the Republican-appointed judge be impeached. The far-right Liberty Council labeled the ruling a classic case of judicial activism, and the Family Research Council said it was another example of progressives using liberal courts to obtain a political goal they cannot obtain at the ballot box. Political commentators, however, noted a virtually non-existent response to the ruling by Republican leaders. Some speculated that marriage equality is simply no longer a successful wedge issue for them. Presidential candidate Barack Obama opposed Proposition 8, which took marriage rights away from lesbians and gays in a state whose Supreme Court had approved them. He's also against amending the U.S. Constitution to define marriage as exclusively heterosexual, and frequently voices support for repeal of the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, which denies federal recognition to legally married same-gender couples. Nevertheless, the president remains opposed to civil marriage for same-gender couples and favors civil unions, even though they've proven to be inadequately unequal in the few states that offer them. So pity poor senior White House advisor David Axelrod as he tried to explain the glaring inconsistencies of the administration's position during an interview on MSNBC the day after the Prop 8 ruling.
The president opposed Proposition 8 at the time. He felt that it was divisive. He felt that it was mean-spirited, and he opposed it at the time. So we reiterated that position yesterday. The president does oppose same-sex marriage, but he supports equality for gay and lesbian couples and benefits and other issues, and that has been effectuated in federal agencies under his control. He's supports civil unions, and that's been his position throughout. So nothing has changed.
This story continues to evolve. Judge Walker could soon lift the virtually automatic temporary stay of his ruling, opening civil marriage to California's lesbian gay couples almost immediately. Whatever his decision, the losing side could appeal it to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, where Prop 8 backers have already filed a challenge to the ruling itself. Questions about a majority vote taking away the rights of a minority have now gained greater prominence, particularly with the strong U.S. Constitution-based equal protection arguments advanced by the Olson Boys legal team and endorsed by Walker's decision. Olson cleverly pointed to another constitutional provision during an interview on the Fox News Channel late this week when he asked, "Would you like Fox's right to free press put up to a vote?" Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Jen Mahoney, Michael LeBeau, and Sherry Lund contributed program material. Thanks also to Rex Walker and to John Hamilton, Christopher Martinez, and Dan Fritz of Pacifica Radio's California Evening News. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and by you. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to contribute to that support, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. You can connect to our blog, Facebook page, and tweets there, and also find us on iTunes. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Dade City Community Radio, Dade City, Florida, to RRR, Gladesville, New South Wales, KRFC, Fort Collins, Colorado, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, and we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
This is Dean Becker, producer of the 420 Drug War News, Cultural Baggage, and Century of Lies. You want to hear the real truth? Do you want to know what's really going on? You know you'll never get the whole truth from Fox or MSNBC. Cheerleaders for war, for profits, for charlatans, for ratings alone. If you value the worth, the spine, the truth of Pacifica Radio, please show your appreciation. Show your support for KPFT, the station that was twice bombed off the air and rose out of the ashes to become a beacon of light and a purveyor of truth.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1, Houston.
I'm Ray Hill. You're listening to radio station KPFT Houston. We're a child of the Pacifica Foundation, and Pacifica Foundation was founded in 1949 and virtually invented public radio. Much of what you know about the history of yourself, your country, your society, much you understand about your culture has grown out of public radio and television stations that had their roots in Pacifica Foundation. We need and deserve your continuous support. Listen carefully for the number. The host will tell you how you can become a listener subscriber to this important media effort.
Everybody that's listening to this here song tonight.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1.
Press out! Even though I might have broken up inside.